So I'd like to introduce our next speaker. Pay no attention to the agenda, because our next speaker is not Mr. Raman Sethi. He was unable to be here today, and we have a last-minute fill-in for Raman. And his name is Mr. Paul Chenoweth, and Paul is an epidemiologist with the Global Immunization Division at the CDC. And he's a past graduate of one of my favorite programs in CDC, the Public Health Informatics Fellowship Program. So please welcome Paul, who is going to talk with us about the National Polio Surveillance Project.
Thank you. So yes, unfortunately, Raman Sethi, as well as colleagues from the National Polio Surveillance Project, also known as NPSP, were unable to attend today. However, I hope to effectively communicate NPSP's message regarding the use of optical mark reader, also referred to as optical mark recognition, or OMR. So even though I might not be intimately familiar with all the details of this particular presentation, I am quite familiar with the overall process, in that in 2008, I ended up conducting an evaluation or a review of the data system for polio data in India. And one of the recommendations was for NPSP to consider the use of OMR. I then followed up a visit to NPSP with a prototype of an OMR system that would be applicable for recording or managing immunization data. So that was a small little prototype that we developed and designed and developed in-house here at CDC. So that pretty much was the impetus, or kind of the jump start, for NPSP to start using OMR. So in terms of the background, so OMR, optical mark recognition, it's been around for a long time. It's been around for decades. It's widely used in sectors such as education, in gaming, in voting. It's known to be, you know, very cost effective. It's very, has a very low error rate. It's very simple to use, and it's very, very cheap to use. But unfortunately, or for some reason, it is not used much in public health. So this presentation, it will share NPSP's experience using OMR to manage frequently collected polio immunization monitoring data. So to give you, I guess, that the presentation will follow as such. So I'll first give an overview of strategies for polio eradication, talk about the scale and scope of the immunization campaigns, as well as the monitoring that takes place in India. And this is really just quite fascinating how many children they actually immunize. Talk about the data management before OMR was implemented, as well as afterwards. Talk about other options used, or other options investigated other than OMR. Talk about the steps of OMR data processing. Talk about the pilot testing, the benefits of OMR versus the conventional system, and then the lessons learned, and then finally the recommendations. So a background regarding polio eradication. So following the success that the world had eradicating smallpox, in 1988, the World Health Assembly said, okay, well, let's eradicate polio. So tremendous progress has been made over the last many, many years. And yes, unfortunately, we're still unable to eradicate it. So there's been like over a 99% reduction in the number of cases, but it's just that last 1% which is really has become especially challenging. So there are four countries that have not been able to eradicate polio. India is one of them. The others are Pakistan, Nigeria, and Afghanistan. So here, this slide is very, very encouraging. You can see over the last 13 years, there's been a reduction in the cases in India. So there's been one case thus far this year. So that case was in early January. And polio, we're about a third of the way through the high transmission season of polio. So hopefully, you know, if we continue at this rate, more than likely, India will be off the list of endemic countries, which will really energize the entire program. The strategies for polio eradication: one is to strengthen immunization services, or the routine immunization services. The other is conducting high-quality supplementary immunization activities, often referred to as SIAs. And these SIAs, it can be done at the national level, the subnational level, or very targeted mop-up campaigns. Another extremely important strategy is surveillance. So one needs to go out and look for cases of polio. And then, so you have the kind of the case surveillance aspect of the program, as well as the laboratory aspect, where all suspected cases would then be tested in the laboratory to confirm whether or not the paralysis was caused by the polio virus. So the scale and scope of SIAs and independent monitoring data in India, it's really, as I say, just phenomenal. So if the entire country is targeted for an SIA, you're dealing with over 170 million children that are immunized within an NID. And that NID could last about 4 to 5 days. It is, you know, and these children, it's children under 5 years of age and under. So the vaccination teams, as many as 2 million vaccination teams, visit over 200 million houses. So it's really just phenomenal. I mean, there's no other country that conducts a campaign quite as effectively as India. So that is at the kind of the national level. At the subnational level, because polio is not, I mean, there's very few polio reservoirs in India. So there's a few of those reservoirs are up in northern India, as well as there's also a very large group of susceptible individuals up in the very population dense regions of really two states, Uttar Pradesh and Bihar. So these campaigns, they're held much more frequently, and but still covering up to onwards of 70 million children. So this is the frequency and scope of the SIAs during the last 12 months. So here you can see two NIDs, or national immunization days, were conducted, and then several subnational immunization days in the very high-risk areas. So here are the areas where the SIAs were most frequent. So these areas that are most frequent are also the kind of target area where the OMR was implemented. So following a immunization round, monitors go out and make sure that the vaccination teams did what they were supposed to do. So here too, just dealing with thousands of individuals, so as many for an NID, so for the National Immunization Campaign, as many as 4,000 monitors go out. They fill out a huge number of forms. An NID, you might have over 100,000 forms. These forms contain a tremendous amount of data on each form. And these forms, over the last 12 months, it was estimated about 750,000 forms were filled out. Data management practices before OMR introduction. So again, following an immunization round, they go out, paper and pencil, they complete the forms to see if the teams did what they needed to do. They would then Xerox copy these forms and then ship the forms to the national NPSP in Delhi. The forms organized, sent to a contractor, so the data was actually outsourced in Delhi. The data are entered, sent back to the national program, where NPSP then cleans the data, generates various indicators, disseminates the data back to the field. So the indicators, I mean, as I'd mentioned, there's just a good number of data fields that are collected on each form. So the indicators could mention or could cover, the number of houses that were visited, the number of children that were missed, political involvement, if there was any resistance. That covers there's a lot of data captured on each of these forms. So this whole process with the outsourcing, it takes 30 days to actually generate the indicators that would then help guide the program in their next immunization campaign. However, the problem with this is there's not enough time to act on those data, because these rounds in these high-risk areas, they occur very, very frequently, as often as every month. So So if it takes a month to generate the data, there's no time to act on these data. So so anyways, that was one of the reasons I said, well, let's think about, you know, how can we get these data, you know, very detailed data collected in an electronic way as quickly as possible. And of course, one of the other problems with the current system is the cost of the outsourcing. So alternatives that were considered to OMR was decentralizing the data process. But this requires a software tool, it requires additional staffing to enter at the local level, and it also requires a good amount of support at the local level. So the decentralization was not considered an option, nor is SMS, because again, we're dealing with huge amounts of data, not just summary data, but large amounts of data on each of these forms, and trying to send that via an SMS is not realistic. Plus, you would also need a relatively sophisticated system in order to manage incoming SMS data. There's also a problem with inconsistent cell phone connectivity in some of the more remote locations of India. PDAs, we saw earlier that about 4,000 independent monitors are deployed for a given round or a given NID. So one would have to purchase those, the hardware. You'd have to maintain that hardware. And then also, if it does break down in the field, it would disrupt the monitoring process because there's no paper backup. So the rationale for using OMR, it is to, you know, for the data to be automated. It, you know, could reduce the time if one could do this locally. It wouldn't, the data would no longer have to be outsourced, so you'd be, you know, saving the time as well as the money. And as I'd mentioned earlier, the OMR, if the form is filled out correctly, it's very accurate in terms of reading those data. So it's likely to reduce data entry errors. So the steps to operationalize OMR is to design first the format, the kind of the bubble forms that I think we've all filled out sometime in our life. It requires high precision printing in that if the form itself is slightly skewed or if the margins are off, it's not going to read properly by the software. The software, you also have to develop a template in order to read the scanned image. It requires a good amount of training in terms of how to properly fill and handle the forms. Then next comes the scanning of the forms, and if your scanner has an auto-doc feeder, that's a relatively simple process. The scanned image, or each time you scan a form, it creates an image file of that, which then is processed and then converted to data. And then last but not least, the data are then cleaned, validated, and then disseminated. So here are a couple photos. So this is one of the OMR forms, so really quite a complicated form. So this is dealing with at least, this is BASA, kind of independent monitoring format, where they go and look at kind of temporary work sites, I think as many as maybe 10 or 20 of these work sites, and, you know, capture data on each of those sites. Once the form is filled out, it is scanned. So here it's just a regular image scanner. There's also OMR scanners that just use light and kind of assess the reflectivity of the light. This is an image scanner where it creates an image which is then processed. So it says a properly marked OMR form is scanned by the scanner with color dropout. It obtains a clean image. Next, the OMR software reads the exact position of the marked bubbles, converts them to data using the pre-designed template. So the pilot testing, so because of the sheer magnitude of these campaigns, there was it was pilot tested in a few regions, in Delhi, in Western UP, and then I attended, I think it would have been in November of 2009, a pilot testing that was held in Bihar, in Supal and Araria in northern Bihar. So some of the observations, as you saw, the form was really quite complicated, and I think there was, you know, some apprehension by the monitors at first, but they really quickly got the hang of it. So, you know, after getting the hang of it, after one or two rounds, they were able to take the same amount of time to fill out the form as their original form. It was also observed that it was easier to use a number two pencil and eraser to fill out the forms. And these forms are filled out in the field, of course. Also, originally clipboards were not distributed, but the clipboards were, a wise investment in terms of getting a very, very clear, very clean form. One of the big concerns when I was out there in November 2009, it's like, well, what's going to happen during the monsoon season? What's going to happen when we're in really rainy, really muddy conditions? So if the monitors are faced with that challenge, photocopies of the monitoring form would be photocopies would be used in the field, and then those data would be transposed onto the scannable form in a cleaner environment. So then it was also determined that the data generated was reliable and consistent. So they ran with this project, and they fully implemented the project in, I think, during five quarters, and I believe there's plan to continue this even further. But here again, if you remember, the kind of the reservoirs and the high-risk areas are covered in Bihar, Western UP, and you know some of the more populated areas in Maharashtra and I guess West Bengal. But yeah, this area alone, you know, is covering again just millions and millions of individuals, children under 5 years of age. So this is one of the key slides in terms of the time frame after OMR. So we saw earlier that it was taking approximately 30 days to get the indicators back to the field. So again, after the end of the round, the monitors go out, they collect the data on an OMR form. The forms are then sent to the subregion. So each state has several subregions. The forms are then scanned at the subregion. Now they're organized and scanned. The data are validated, cleaned, and then forwarded again. You know, just the data file, not the actual forms, are sent to NPSP, the headquarters. And then within 14 days, the data are, again, checked by NPSP. They're cleaned. The indicators are generated and disseminated. So again, a really huge cost saving. So as I mentioned before, if the rounds are taking place very frequently, the data that had been collected using the standard forms, they're really almost useless at that point because you're already in stages of conducting another vaccination round. So again, just showing the time savings. So here we're looking at, you know, six rounds using the conventional system versus six rounds using the OMR system in western Uttar Pradesh, so one of the states in northern India. So I'm assuming that the first, some of the early rounds where they were using the OMR, it was an equivalent time period as the conventional system. But again, as they became more familiar with the system, the time to actually generate the indicators dropped by half. And in Bihar, kind of similar gains in time. So one of the other concerns, I think, when the idea of OMR was first introduced, it's like, well, the form's going to be more complicated, it's going to take more time to fill out, the number of forms are going to drop, and you know the program obviously didn't want to have, you know, fewer data. But fortunately, that is not the case. As I said earlier, it's taking them approximately the same amount of time to fill out the forms. And the there was no drop at all in terms of the forms, the number of forms that are being collected. So yeah, no drop in volume in the monitoring data. In terms of the cost, so here's the reoccurring cost. So the reoccurring cost in the conventional system, it is the cost of the form. So you know, when you're dealing with, you know, 100,000 forms, there's obviously going to be a cost there. The conventional forms, they're a little less expensive than the OMR forms, but you also have the expense of the outsourcing. So just in terms of the reoccurring costs, they estimated there was approximately a 63% drop in the reoccurring costs. However, there was the initial cost to get the system in place. So they're saying the estimated the initial cost of about $42,000 to get this technology out to all the subregions. So the initial cost could be recovered in approximately 2 years. So, you know, that's just the cost, but really, if the data that was being collected in the conventional system is outdated, I mean, I think you really need to look at some of the other costs as opposed to just that cost. So in terms of the benefits of OMR over the conventional method, so there's a reduced time lag, as Esh already shown, a lower reoccurring cost, about 63%, and another very important point is that it was easier to find and correct the errors, because once the forms are sent for outsourcing, there was no way to actually go back and say, well, you know, this form was not filled correctly, but seeing how it is now being done at the subregion level, that the errors could be collected or corrected at a local level. So OMR lessons learned. They say that, you know, there's not a lot of errors these days. However, the errors were pretty much based on kind of sloppiness. Here, the forms, you're always given the option to write the actual data point, the actual value. So here, they wrote 25, however, just a little sloppy in terms of leaving out this last digit. Here, again, just a mistake in transcription. As opposed to 6, the bubbles are not marked correctly. Here they marked, you know, multiple bubbles. But this, you know, the more familiar they become with the form, the less of an issue this is, and they say, you know, this can all, you know, be corrected through training. So additional lessons learned. Avoid frequent changes of printers. I already mentioned that the printer, the forms themselves need to be cut quite precisely. And because they were actually needing so many forms, they were using different printers. And, you know, just it's best to avoid. I mean, if you find a printer that has the ability to cut a precise form, just continue to use those individuals. You need an expert designer to kind of do the layout of the form. So it's not, I mean, it's something that can be done, but if you have frequent changes, hopefully you will not have frequent changes, but it does require some design expertise. The training of the monitors and the staff responsible for the scanning, obviously that is critical. And if, you know, you have different versions of the form, it's obviously very important that you have, you know, that the software is the correct version in order to make sure the forms are read correctly. So the resources required for OMR, already mentioned a professional designer to develop the forms, the professional printers to get a nice clean form. You need a scanner with auto dock feeder and the colored drop option. And then you need the quality OMR software to reliably read the images and convert those to data. So last but not least, the recommendations from NPSP. So NPSP recommends the use of OMR because of, you know, their experience, and they experience that it is very effective in reducing the recurring cost of the data management with no longer need to outsource these data. It's more time efficient than manual data entry. It allows early detection of errors and, you know, the ability to correct at the local level. It is more cost-effective and efficient if the volume and frequency of the data is very high. And as you can see, I mean, India, they are just amazingly good at collecting huge amounts of data. So cost-effectiveness and efficiency of OMR, it should be assessed based on the program needs before such an investment of resources is had. So that is it. So I thank you, as well as I'm sure all the colleagues at NPSP in Delhi. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much, Paul. There's actually two microphones for you guys right there. Would be happy to open up the floor to questions. I know we had one right here, and I see a gentleman raising his hand right here. Yes, sir?
So as far as the open source flow, could you expand a little bit more on the technology stack, including what OS version is looking for it and what you're using the persistence for.
So are you talking about the web-based?
The web-based
tool. And I mean, we run on Windows and Linux. It's based on an Apache Tomcat, running on Tomcat 6. It can run on Tomcat 5. Correct. And then database-wise, this demo is set up with Postgres, integrates with MySQL, several things. The full list of the technology stack is available if you want to email Magnus. We do have it.
Is it available as Windows distribution?
So right now it's a limited source distribution in that sense. We do have it's buildable code, but a WAR is available.
All right, we've got a question out here. I'm going to pass it on the microphone so that the
folks
on the live stream can hear the questions.
I have a question for the OMR system. So the pilot was done with the same personnel that the whole result was compared with? That's one question, and then I have multiple ones.
Yes. So the same monitors are used for, using the conventional system as well as the OMR, exactly.
Okay, and does the OMR have to deal with language issues? Are these in regional languages? Because the formation of letters or even numbers are different depending on different regions. So how did they handle that?
Yeah, it's a very good question because, the original, the conventional forms, they were also used in English. However, from what I understand, there were some forms that were in the native language, but apparently not an issue, and that all of the OMR forms at the present time are in English.
Okay, and a supplementary question. So the feedback in both ways, both cases came from the center. The forms all went to the center. The analysis was done at the center, and then the feedback was sent back. And if it was, then in what format was the feedback sent back?
Yeah, so in terms of the scanning is done at the sub-region level within each of the states. The raw data is then sent to the national level where the kind of generation of the indicators is performed, and they are the ones who disseminate the data back to the local level.
In what format?
In what format? To be honest, that is one aspect of the program that I have not seen. More than likely, knowing the program in India, I trust it would have been in an Excel format. Right, so probably just the list of, I don't remember exactly how many indicators are collected in each of these forms, but probably as many as 30 or 40 indicators, so probably just broken down by region in an Excel table.
This was about the openness. I was wondering, you said that the source is freely available, but is it open source and is it licensed, or is it just something
the
that you distribute?
Yeah, OpenEssence is the LGPL. It's licensed.
And that's what the web-based, I'm sorry, I missed the beginning of your presentation. So that's the web-based version of
correct.
What you're doing. No. And then the desktop version is something that is...
Right. We have that on the Sage's site to download. It's in the process of being released open source, but it's freely available as a download.
Then your configuration of OpenEssence, is that open source as well because of the OpenEssence license, or?
The configuration is included in the open source release.
Yeah. Okay.
This the demo config.
Okay, and then another question I had is in watching the different steps you had in your program. Is it like a modular architecture so that if you had some pieces of the architecture already built that you could plug into your tool, or is it just something kind of all-in-one, you have to import your raw data and go from there?
No, it's modular. It's built as a way to pick and choose the different components that can enhance your already existing architectures. Or
okay.
To improve. Yeah.
Just so I understand, so if I had an EMR that I could send out HL7 messages to a tool that was already collecting that, right, and classifying and coding it, mm-hmm. then I could take that and import that into your tool to go ahead and do the timelines and things like that.
Correct.
Oh, okay, great. And then the last thing I had a question about was the export, you talked about data export, but it kind of goes along with the modular architecture question of if I wanted to transport that data out like using a standard like IXF2 or SDMXHD, one of those standards, can I do that, or is it just a data export that is of like Excel or CSV or things like that?
Yeah, right now through the OpenEssence there's the Excel export and then the graphs and charts. Otherwise, I mean, the database would be available for another type of query.
Okay, but so yeah, it doesn't automatically support SDMXHD out. It you could build your own, you know, web service that could do that or whatever, but.
Correct.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. I think that's it.
So this question is for Omar. You said that you looked at different Omar software products, and I'd be interested to see what software product you actually ended up using for both the form creator as well as maybe the form reader. And also, the other question I have is, how do you, or did you consider blending OCR as well as OMR as part of the form creation? So information like names and locations, for example, don't have to be bubble filled in. So essentially combining both OMR and OCR capabilities under one form, was that a possibility? Was that a consideration? So there's two questions, you know, that I'm posing here.
Yeah, so as a reminder to those that are here, that I am just filling in for the NPSP. So in terms of the software that I'm familiar with, here at CDC, we developed a simple prototype, we created the software ourselves. It was a very simple program, just using kind of a real kind of light-emitting OMR scanner. However, it was not necessarily robust enough to collect the amount of data required by NPSP. So I know that NPSP, they started to look at graphics OMR. I forget what the name of that particular software. But then they found a local vendor, and I may be incorrect, but back in 2009, the vendor of choice, I believe, was called GingerWebs. So it is really just a local kind of homegrown software development company in India. In terms, and I trust that is the software that is being used at the present time. In terms of using kind of a blend of OMR and OCR, because they are using an image scanner, that would be a possibility. However, I don't believe that was really an option that was investigated. And I cannot tell you the reasons why, but because the vast majority of the data are collected numerically, I think it was just in order to keep the process simple, just simply OMR was used. I think in terms of the text that is captured, the majority of the text that is captured is really just the monitor's name and the region. So again, very very limited alphanumeric characters are captured.
All right. Any other questions from the hometown audience here?
Hi. This question is for the Essence products. It was regarding the Essence products. I'm curious about the level of summarization that is accepted by the product. Does it lend itself, I guess, depending on the type of data collection tools that are used, towards a more granular patient level data collection analysis? And will it also accept kind of summarized data? How do you manage that aspect?
So, I mean, typically that part of it would be managed by the database itself. The different views, you'd configure OpenEssence to mirror the database, essentially, that you would have one that would have the field for the summary, and, but at the same time you could have another one. This example is a clinic visit input, which would be your line listing. This one only captured with the three symptoms But you would have more fields and a more complex form. In terms of tying them together in query and reporting, that is also configured. So you could sum up the data across the clinic visit inputs. You could also look if it was another stream, your summary inputs, if they weren't overlapping type thing.
A quick follow-up question to that. So in the demonstration, you were capturing symptoms. Is that something then the system parses? Does it have a tool to process free text and map it to different categories, or is that something that would already then have to be predetermined, the categories that...
So it's data agnostic in that sense. It won't... So you could filter and query and group by some of the symptoms or symptoms that match a certain set of... You could do a like query type thing for the grouping and stuff. But any further analysis on a particular symptom or anything, that is outside of the tool from that aspect.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Do we have any questions on the live meeting? No questions on the live meeting? Okay. Great. Any last chance for questions here in the audience? Yes, ma'am. No, no problem. That's what we're here for, right?
I thought of another question about the open source stuff. I was wondering if you had a community for your open source code so that people are actually contributing back to the code?
So that is something that's currently in the works. So mm-hmm. We just recently received the open source approval and signatures, and it's just, the next step is just that, to put it out somewhere and start getting feedback and users.
Cool. And then along with that, one of the things we find is that countries always want us to build local capacity around programming, right? And I was just wondering, I'm not sure, like I said, I don't know if you mentioned this earlier, what countries you guys are working in right now, but I don't know if you've had any experience around that. People requesting you to actually develop the capacity to program into your tool or to be able to take that on as their own ownership and be able to do it the way they want to do it?
We have done some customizations for some of these installations. Current countries, EDE is running on a pilot in Cambodia. OpenEssence is being used in a custom capacity down in Peru. And really, the goal is to train them up and kind of hand it over to that sense.
Train them up as in like the programming of it or as just as the data ownership of it?
That or in the configuration changes.
Oh, okay. And do you guys do training programs around that or is it something that you kind of just work one-on-one with people as they...
More of a one-on-one.
Are there any plans for training programs around that?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Any last questions?